BioWare looks to cover up the Anthem meltdown, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey, Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and you're in for a treat today. But first, we're going to be covering some tech trivia, and then we're going to move on to today in tech history, and then we're going to cover a couple tech articles, gadget articles, gaming articles, so stay tuned. A couple of the articles that we'll be covering today is obviously BioWare's pathetic response to all of this. Interesting Google Plus article about some founders' information being deleted. Amazon quietly removing promotion of its own products. Microsoft killing off a bookstore you probably didn't know about. Facebook pulling its apps from the Windows Phone, and then some. So let's dig right in, shall we? All right, last episode, I asked you guys a question, and this was open to anybody, answerable via Twitter. That question was, what was the first Internet April Fool's Day prank? And let's take a look at a couple of the answers that we got. We got one answer from Noob26Owns, and they said, wasn't it like a fake letter thing? Well, seeing as how that was the only answer, it's pretty close, so I'll give you credit there for that. The correct answer is Kremvax. In 1984, in one of the earliest online hoaxes, a message was circulated that Usenet had been opened to users in the Soviet Union. And I'll actually include an article in today's show notes for today's episode, which is technewsgadget.net/96, that you can actually read a little bit more about, which is the strange story of the Internet's first April Fool's Day prank. It was it's actually quite entertaining and pretty funny along the whole entire thing. Apparently, a 40-year-old computer whiz named Piet Biertema had an idea. He would trick Americans into believing the Soviet Union was joining the Usenet network, the computer communication system in use in the early 1980s. And he got his inspiration from the book 1984. So we figured, why not? And while it remains to be debated whether it was the first Internet prank or there was another one, Usenet was kind of the forum, the hub of the Internet back then, so having this drop in people's laps was like, whoa, what the heck is going on? So it was actually pretty entertaining. So congratulations there for the answer. Moving on to today's trivia question, and if you want to play along, you could certainly play along while you're listening or watching right now and shout out your answer, but we won't be able to see or hear what you said unless you physically type a comment out or tap a reply. And here's how you play. Submit your answer on Twitter, we are at Tech News Gadget, by replying to the tweet with a question for today's trivia. Today is episode number 96, so the link to this tweet will also be listed in our show notes for this episode. Here's how you win. The first correct answer wins and will obviously be announced in the next episode along with your Twitter username. So if you want a chance at doing it, here's your question. Today's question is, what is the most popular image format on the Internet? Answers are open. Fire away on Twitter at Tech News Gadget. All right, moving right along to today in tech history, being that today is April 3rd, 2019. On this day in history, in 1973, Martin Cooper, considered the father of the cellular phone, makes the first cell phone call on a New York City street. And yeah, it was one of those big old brick car phones that probably weighed like 20 pounds. And it was entertaining, but he did it, and they got photo proof to go along with it. So, Internet, it happened. Also, on this day in 1966, the Soviet space probe Luna 10 becomes the first spacecraft to orbit around the moon. It was launched by the USSR from an Earth orbiting platform on March 31st, 1966. Luna's 10's battery will operate for 460 lunar orbits before deactivating as planned on May 30th, 1966. And finally, on this day in history, in 1617, Scottish mathematician Napier dies. John Napier, a Scottish mathematician most famous for inventing logarithms and an early calculating device called Napier's Bones, dies at age 67. That's actually quite impressive for being 1600s. Napier's Bones consisted of multiplication tables inscribed in strips of wood or bone, making for quick calculations, hence why they called it Napier's Bones, mainly because of the material bone or ivory. His logarithmic system provided the basis for the invention of the slide rule around the same time, and logarithms were the principal means by which calculation was performed until the advent of the digital computer. Napier was born in Merchiston, Scotland, in 1550. So, now that that is out of the way, guys, let's head on over and see what's going on today in the tech world. All right, well, first up on the docket, since everybody else is complaining about this, Angry Joel threw a rant about this, Richard Review Tech threw a complaint out about this, everybody's been complaining, BioWare decided to answer with a very basic PR letter, but it's just broke today, and it's called How BioWare's Anthem Went Wrong, and I'll have the link, by the way, guys, to this and all the other articles covered in the show notes for today's episode, technewsgadget.net/96. Apparently, it wasn't even supposed to be called Anthem. Just days before its release in 2017, the game had planned to go with a different title, Beyond. They'd even printed out Beyond t-shirts for the staff. Then, less than a week before the LA press conference held by BioWare's parent company, Electronic Arts, word came down that securing the rights to the trademark would be, quote, too difficult. Beyond was out of the question. Leadership team quickly switched to one of their backup options, Anthem. But whereas Beyond had been indicative of what BioWare hoped the game would be, you'd go out beyond the walls of your fort and into the dangerous wilds around you, well, Anthem really didn't make much sense. Everybody was like, well, that doesn't make any sense. What does this have to do with anything? Said one person who worked on the game. Just days before their game's announcement, the team at BioWare had a brand new name that nobody really understood. Such a last-minute upheaval might seem strange to an outside observer, but on Anthem, well, it was common. Very few things went right in the development of BioWare's latest game, an online cooperative shooter that was first teased in mid-2012, but spent the next 7 years floundering in pre-production. Many features weren't finalized or implemented until the very final months, and to some who worked on the project, it wasn't even clear what kind of game Anthem was until the E3 demo came out in 2017. And then they shoved it out the door 2 years later. Later, they came up with an explanation for the name. The game's planet was enveloped by something called the Anthem of Creation. Oh boy, a powerful, mysterious force that left environmental cataclysms across the world, by which, we're not joking, you only travel so far as a little bit beyond your fort. And that's it. When Anthem launched in February of 2019, it was panned by fans and critics. Today, it has a 55 on the review aggregation site Metacritic, BioWare's lowest score since the company was founded in 1995. The developer, once known for ambitious role-playing games like Dragon Age and the original Mass Effect trilogy, has now released two critical flops in a row, following 2017's disappointing Mass Effect Andromeda, although it remains to be seen which one was the biggest flop. I don't know. Although hardcore fans have put their faith in BioWare to continue fixing Anthem's bugs and improving its mechanics, especially since Bungie's Destiny, a similar game, had a rough launch and eventually recovered, few were happy with the initial release. Anthem wasn't just buggy and thin on content, it felt half-baked, like it hadn't been playtested and tweaked enough by developers with experience playing other looter shooters. And in the weeks that followed after launch, there appeared to be a major new problem every day, and most of that problem was due to the fact that they had no idea what anybody else was working on. I mean, for crying out loud, in pre-production for like 6 or 7 years, where for like a whole year, nothing went on with any of it. It made no forward motion in any way, shape, or form. Then they go, okay, E3 2017 came out. Guys, we gotta launch this game now. And he went, okay. So they put together with the remnants. And you gotta, okay, So as much as I'm dumping on Anthem at this point, do keep in mind that there were a fair amount of people behind the scenes and mentioned in the credits who actually went and said, okay, fine, guys, we got to do this and pull everybody up together. Kicking and screaming to some extent for some people, but oh gosh, what a ripe mess just primed to happen. And I'm not going to go into greater detail with this entire article. This article is long. Can you see the scrolling? I'm still scrolling. This is huge. This is long article. It goes in a lot more information, a lot more detailed information, interviews, people having, I don't know, episodes of depression and everything else because of the immense pressure put upon them. A lot of people were really disappointed by BioWare coming out and saying, we stand behind our team and our leadership for making this happen, and just basically a boilerplate PR response. Nothing really to say, you know, sorry guys, messed up. Although, why would they? It's EA. EA is known for, in general, messing everything up. You guys need to figure out what the heck is going on. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, you've already heard some of my opinions. I've also listened to Angry Joe's opinion on it. I've listened to Rich and Review Tech, his opinion on it, and a couple other people. But I want to hear what you guys think. So, I don't know. Are you liking Anthem? Are you not liking Anthem? Do you really wish it changed? Do you really wish they actually had a game that you could enjoy to go along with it? Do you see, like, fragments of this game littered around the sparse exploration you do outside of your fort in Anthem, and then wonder to yourself, you know what, there's probably a lot more to this game, and I really want to know what that a lot more was, but I don't know if I ever will. Like, why couldn't you put the effort in, and then when you drop the game, gone, oh, okay, this is everything, then you wouldn't have gotten, like, a 55 Metacritic score. I don't know. Let me know down in the comment section, good, bad, or otherwise, what you guys think on this video, or if you're listening via podcast, hey, shoot me a message on Twitter at TechNewsGadget. But yeah, those are my thoughts so far on it. I don't know. I'm not too thrilled about it. And that's all I gotta say. All right. Moving right along. Google, you guys are great. You're brilliant in how you plan out all of this stuff. Actually, I'm gonna say this for most major big name companies too. You guys flub royally when it comes to oopsies. Speaking of flubbing royally, Google has deleted the Google Plus profiles of Larry Page, Sergey Brin, and Sundar Pichai amid the Google Plus shutdown, wiping away years of important company history. And here's the best part. Those founders exclusively use Google Plus for their platform because they said, well, this came out, this is our social network, we might as well show them by leading the example and being there, guys. So Tuesday marked the long-promised day when Google began the process of deleting accounts from the Google Plus social network ahead of its total shutdown. Included in this purge are the Google Plus accounts of high-powered Google execs, whose photos and everything else was vanished from public record. Much of what was on those executives' Google Plus profiles are silly, including selfies of Brin skydiving or Page's favorite pancake recipes. However, those profiles are also significant artifacts of Google's history, including insight into its decision-making process and important company announcements. Now, it's difficult to know how much information was lost. The accounts belonging to executives like Sergey Brin, Sundar Pichai, and Eric Schmidt were deleted shortly after Business Insider reached out to Google for comment. However, we were able to take screenshots of Larry Page's profile before it was deleted. The loss of these profiles from public view makes it much more difficult to get a clear view of Google's past and hold current leadership accountable to previous statements. So I guess they included some of this stuff, screenshots and everything else. By the way, I think there's also the Wayback Machine is still available, so you should be able to see Google Plus profiles so long as you actually know the profile number, because Google Plus decided to just do and plus number. You couldn't pick a username. And if you were, you were lucky. Because you had to have certain requirements to fall under a certain end. So if you don't know the exact profile number URL down to a T, good luck finding it. So there you go. A good little tidbit of information. Good job, Google. Also, we got more Facebook woes. coming upon us. Facebook asked some users for their email passwords because, well, why not? As company executives try to rebrand Facebook as a privacy company, kind of interesting to do, seeing as the fact that they really never took privacy seriously to begin with since the early stages, and Apple always has. There's a stark difference. The company is still apparently struggling to instill a privacy culture internally and with third-party developers. As Kevin Paulson of the Daily Beast reported on April 2nd, some new Facebook users were being asked to provide both their email address and their email password in order to register accounts. And in a blog post today, apparently researchers from the cloud security firm UpGuard reported that they had discovered two publicly accessible caches of Facebook user data created by third-party applications that connected to the Facebook platform. Both caches were hosted by Amazon Web Services S3 and the AWS public cloud, which were publicly available, at which possibly 583 million users were exposed to, well, let's see, their names, their email addresses, their passwords, likes, reactions, comments, posts, everything. So, apparently what was going on with this password please practice was first noticed by a software developer and information security expert who goes by the handle eSushi. So he said on Twitter, "Hey Facebook, demanding the secret password of the personal email accounts of your users for verification or any other kind is a horrible idea. From an InfoSec point of view, by going down that road, you're practically fishing for passwords you're not supposed to know." Now, these requests were made to users with many web-based email hosting services. Google's Gmail was not among them, as Facebook used the OAuth protocol to verify Gmail accounts, so verification with an email password was not required. Please tell me this wasn't Hotmail. Although if it was, you know, stab Hotmail.com a couple times and say, "Die already, die, sucker." Maybe it will. Maybe it'll finally go the way of Internet Explorer and millions of people around the world will rejoice. Hotmail is no longer. Anyways, I'm getting off track here. In response to the Daily Beast, a Facebook spokesperson said the email passwords are not stored by Facebook, but given Facebook's previous problem with logging passwords and retaining other personal data, that statement may be greeted with, well, healthy skepticism here on the internet interwebs. The Facebook spokesperson also said that the company was ending the practice of requesting email passwords for webmail accounts. One wonders how long this has been going on for then anyways. A test by Ars Technica today confirmed that using email accounts on mail.com and other webmail services, we registered accounts and instead got a prompt for a code emailed to the email address provided. So, yeah. Both of these cases show that while Facebook has promised to limit the ability of developers to extract personal data from its service in the wake of the latest scandal, there are still third parties that have access to large volumes of Facebook data, and Facebook isn't necessarily policing how it stores that data despite the company's new policy. So, it seems like we're going to break the problem and then fix it. And then fix it. Big point. So, if you guys are always interested, you could just join the Never Facebook crowd and just say, "I'm deleting my Facebook account for the 10th time." And then, I don't know, join another network. I think MySpace is still available. MySpace, anybody? MySpace? Also, you guys saw the switch over. This is the fun of doing it live. So, also in the news today, Amazon is quietly removing promotions of its own products as calls for tech regulation escalate. So, apparently, as tech giants face growing scrutiny over their market power, Amazon has quietly removed some of the most aggressive promotional spots for so-called private label products on its website. Private label products are created by Amazon or partners and are sold only on Amazon's website under an exclusive brand name. Now, they benefit Amazon in many ways. They expand a selection of products on the site, offer better profit margins than selling third-party products, make supply chain management easier, and can help Amazon persuade big brands to cut prices to remain competitive on its own site. Amazon has been ramping up the number of private label brands during the last 3 years, stoking fear and concern among some sellers and brands that sell competing products on the marketplace. Well, obviously. Now, Amazon's promotions for these products, which started showing up at least a year ago, were exclusively reserved for Amazon's own private label products and appeared in highly visible areas of the site, like the top of search results or next to the buy box of a competitor's product page. Other companies spend billions buying Amazon ads that link to their product listings on the site, vaulting Amazon into the number 3 spot among U.S. digital advertising providers behind Google and Facebook, according to eMarketer. However, in recent weeks, Amazon has significantly scaled down or relocated on-site promotions for its private label products, according to multiple Amazon sellers and consultants. And the main reason for that, guys, you'll find this most interesting. The products weren't selling that well. I know, right? You reserved all of this exclusive space, you know, all of this exclusive stuff, private brand label, Amazon backing it. And, well, you just fall by the way of the numbers, which is, wasn't doing too good. So, looks like an experiment that went that went wrong. So, looks like we won't have to be worrying about that anymore now, will we? Alright, moving on to some more news here. Facebook will be pulling its app from Windows Phone on April 30th. Facebook is bidding farewell to its family of apps for Windows Phone, including Messenger, Instagram, and the original Facebook app. A Microsoft spokesperson confirmed to Engadget on Tuesday that Facebook will end its support for its apps on Windows Mobile starting April 30th. Windows Phone users will then have to resort to accessing Facebook or Instagram through their phone's browser. Now, the upcoming removal was first noticed this weekend on Instagram, as reported by Windows Central. Windows Phone users on Reddit said they received a notification saying that Instagram would pull its app on April 30th. Facebook, Instagram, and Messenger are among the top free apps in the Microsoft Store, but it's unclear how many active users this might impact. Still, the departure of Facebook shouldn't surprise many Windows Phone users who are still holding on to that device that is on its death knell. In case you guys have been living under a rock or using a brick phone, Microsoft announced that it was officially killing off its Windows Phone business in 2016 following lackluster sales. Surprise! It halted issuing security and software updates in December 2018. Major third-party apps have been fleeing the Microsoft Store ever since 2015. But the few Windows Phone users left clinging to their increasingly defunct devices with the gleefulness of a 30-year-old still using their student ID for movie discounts. Well, people who use a Windows Phone in 2019 do it for many different reasons. Some prefer their device's camera to the latest offerings, others distrust Apple and Google's track record with privacy, and some may prefer the underrated piece of owning a smartphone with fewer apps. So, here's the funny thing, the active phone, Windows Phone subreddit even has a weekly thread called "Is There an App for That?" where users discuss alternative to basic apps like Spotify or Facebook Messenger. Collaborative troubleshooting is a main pastime. Maybe notifications have stopped working or the phone eats up photo attachments. While nostalgia for the Windows Phone is real, even its most diehard users can't ignore that their devices are no longer fulfilling the basic purpose of any smartphone, which was to make their life easier. It's kind of going the way of the Zune, of which I'm missing out on that piece of tech. It was great. I enjoyed it a little bit more than the iPod. But for one reason or another, they decided, oh, the Zune sucks, and killed that one off too. So now there you have it. So hold on to your Windows Phone if you still have it. Maybe you'll get some good collector edition money off of eBay in like 20 or 30 years' time, right? Right? All right, well, Microsoft is killing off a bookstore apparently you probably didn't even know it had. Well, for reasons that were never entirely clear, Microsoft released a bookstore for Windows 10 back in 2017. I know you missed that announcement too, right? So did I. The Edge browser was given support for EPUB books, and the Microsoft Store had a book category offering a range of free and non-free books. Well, no longer. Yesterday, the company ended book sales entirely. Now, we can't really imagine the bookstore was ever a major success. Combined with the decision to abandon its Edge browser and switch to Chromium, it's hilarious. It's not altogether surprising that maintaining support for electronic books was more effort than Microsoft wanted to make, because they just sat there the whole time and said, well, Amazon is doing really good with the Kindle and the ebooks, so yeah, we'll do the same thing too, guys. What's going on? It's not doing good. I'll kill it. That's essentially what they did. Those scarce few of you who have bought books will have until July to read them, at which point you'll be given a full refund. All books ordered through the service are being destroyed, including the free ones. This marks the second major media area that Microsoft has given up on. After ditching the music business in 2017, this leaves the Xbox with games, films, and TV shows as the only remaining outlet for buying digital media from Microsoft. The game business is healthy indeed. Microsoft is believed to be set to release a new Xbox that only supports digital downloads, and the TV and film section seem to get new titles regularly, so one assumes it's probably going to be around for a while. So there you have it. All you book readers are just probably going to have to forget that too, and then just hop right back on over to the Kindle. Yeah, because the Kindle, it still works. And finally today, Epic Games CEO is clarifying his position about store exclusivity. And apparently, on an interesting side note, apparently Ninja has been throwing a fit about Fortnite's latest changes. Apparently, he doesn't like something about the patch and the wait times. To which I say, Ninja, welcome to League of Legends circa, what, 2017, 2016, where you had to wait 10 minutes between games and ranked? And especially in the higher ranked, you had to wait maybe 40 minutes between games? Yeah, make for really great practice time. Welcome! Every company seems to deal with this. Anyways, moving on. A few weeks back, Epic Games' Steve Allison spoke to PC World about the exclusive deals it was striking with publishers to get games on his platform. Allison stated, "We will definitely not be doing exclusives at this scale for a long period of time." A few days after that statement, Epic signed a deal with the developers behind Observation that was essentially a repeat of the situation with Metro Exodus. In response to a fan inquiry on Twitter about the matter, Epic CEO Tim Sweeney said, "We have had a lot of discussions about this since GDC. Epic is open to continuing to sign and funding exclusivity deals with willing developers and publishers regardless of their previous plans or announcements around Steam." Referring back to Allison's stance, Sweeney continued, "This prompted further discussions at Epic, leading to realization that these calls must be up to developers and publishers, and Epic wouldn't tell them no on account of existing statements made about Steam." Now, to clarify, this all happened before Gearbox's announcement of Borderlands 3 being exclusive to Epic's storefront for 6 months this morning. Not to mention the fact that, yeah, it'll be around and then they'll release it to, like, Steam and other platforms on around 2020. So despite previously claiming that it would be backing off on gathering so many exclusives, Epic is now ready to take more, well, exclusives. And the world keeps on turning. Epic will continue to sign exclusives, even for games already on Steam. So, but I don't really see much of a problem with this. I mean, if you have the exposure and you're a developer and you're like, okay, so if we make a game, where would be the best place to put it? I know, number one, you're going to say Steam, put it on Steam. But then you're going to say, yeah, but you want to know something funny? What Epic Games did is they essentially went around Google and then they went around Apple and they said, screw you to both of them because they weren't going to take no 30% revenue cut. So they made their own platform and everybody signed up for it and everybody's on it and using it, in PC and ever. Okay. Outside of PlayStation and Xbox and consoles, it's kind of dominating and Steam's getting a little bit concerned and Epic Games goes, hey guys, see, this is what happens when you don't innovate and you keep pushing the needle forward. We're going to push the needle forward for you. So just take a step back, Valve. Don't worry about it. You know, you can sit there and steam a little bit, get it? And then you can come back and we'll let you play. We'll let you play. But, you know, you're not the big old, big bad Monopoly anymore. So, I don't know. Do you think it's a good thing or not? I don't know. Let me know. Oh, by the way, the article links to everything that we covered today can be found at technewsgadget.net/96. And if you're listening via podcast, you should be able to just type or swap or swipe or swap, however you get more information, and you should be able to have the show notes right there. Tap on an article that you want, and you can watch it and read it, right? On your smartphone. Isn't it amazing? Isn't technology great? Well, with that, I think that covers all of it. Oh, wrong button. I keep pressing wrong. I can't see. The stupid microphone's in the way. It's not my fault. Okay, gosh, I'm just getting over and getting fooled on April Fool's Day and then recovering the day after because it was another day to get fooled on, to some extent. But anyways, that wraps up this episode of The Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and Facebook Watch. So be sure to check one out that you're going to be most likely to tune into, or most likely there, hit that subscribe or follow button. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, let us know and double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next one. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.